Okay, folks, you are listening to Planet Porky. Welcome on board. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. And thank you also for the great responses to our last podcast, which, of course, starred the wonderful Leslie Ann Jones, who's with me again in the studio today. Leslie Ann, once again, it's great to have you back. What is the simple attraction of working with me?
I can't stay away, Mike, can I really? It's... Yeah, it's that indefinable quality that you have.
Yes, yes.
We can't put words to these things,
no,
really, can
no,
we?
No, no, not really, no. I know exactly how you feel. Lots of people have told me about that. Now, Leslie Ann, of course, it's getting nearer to Christmas. Been to any decent Christmas party since we last met?
I have. Yeah. I went to the Sods Night at the Savoy, which is the Society of Distinguished Songwriters.
Really?
It's a gathering that was founded by Mitch Murray, CBE, invested at the Palace only the other day. Congratulations to Mitch.
Yes.
He founded this club about 50 years ago, and it's completely non-charity, non-benevolent. Yeah. It's a bunch of songwriters, because from the days when there were a handful of people in this country who wrote pretty much all the pop songs and gave them away.
Right.
So they've been reaping the royalties all these years, but their songs have been made famous by other people.
Right.
So, for example, you had somebody like Barry Mason,
yes,
who co-wrote Why Delilah, that Tom Jones had a massive hit with.
Did he really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that song, of course, adopted by Stoke City Football Club's fans.
There you go.
And often criticised in this modern day and age for being violence against women.
Well, anyway, it's a long time since that was written. So on this particular night, you have this fabulous dinner in the River Room at the Savoy, which is the most beautiful room in London.
Oh, yeah, the Savoy Hotel in London, on the banks of the River Thames. One of London's leading hotels. Yes.
Just gorgeous. And you have this spectacular banquet.
Yep.
And then all these songwriters take turns to go up on stage and they perform one of their own songs.
Wow.
Including people like Tim Rice, Mike Batt, Richard Kerr, who was King Sod this year. And then the Sod Father comes up, who is Mitch Murray, of course.
Right. Okay.
And it's a wonderful night. So I went to that, and I also went to the Scribblers Christmas lunch, which is actually a thing that I organise at the moment with David Stark and Rab Noakes. Do you remember Rab Noakes from Lindisfarne?
No, but I loved Lindisfarne. I used to work in the North East in Newcastle, and I used to go to their Christmas concert.
He wrote the song Watching the World Go By.
Did he?
Which is one of their hits on that first album, Fog on the Tyne.
Did he write Fog on the Tyne? And it's all right,
Lady Eleanor.
Eleanor, that's right, yeah, Lady Eleanor, yeah. But Fog on the Tyne, I mean, Christ. I think they disbanded about 25 or 30 years ago, but they only ever then got together at Christmas to do the Lindisfarne
Wonderfully
Christmas
melodic.
Song. And in fact, I've stayed in a cottage on Lindisfarne, the island itself, that you can walk out to, you know, at low tide and all that kind of stuff. And it's an exotic and magnificent part of the world. And they were one of the... Meet Me on the Corner was their first single.
Oh, that was a great
single.
Song.
Yeah, that's right.
But we have this lunch. So it's biannual. So we have one in June. First Tuesday of June, first Tuesday of December every year. And this year we had our guest of honour was Ray Williams, the man who invented Elton John.
Oh, crikey.
So he lives in North Carolina, where he's got a hugely successful label.
Yes.
But he flew 4,000 miles to be with us, like the old, This Is Your Life.
Yeah.
And he was the guy who introduced Reg Dwight, as Elton then was, to Bernie Taupin, the lyricist.
Yes.
And together they created Elton and that massive career. He's in Rocket Man.
Wow.
He's one of the characters in Rocket Man, which has been nominated for Best Picture.
Right.
Best Original Song, Rocket Man, and Best Actor for Taron Egerton.
Yes.
What do you think about that?
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
And I haven't seen the one that you were highly critical of about Freddie Mercury.
Oh, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Bohemian Rhapsody. Because, frankly, I'm not interested in going and seeing people playing the real, you know, I stick to the real things. I love Freddie Mercury as a musician, love Queen Records. I just want to listen to them. Never was a great Elton John fan because basically he was a piano player, so I didn't think his records ever held much raw passion and, you know, aggression.
Ah, but what amazing songs.
And you're forgetting,
of course, that you were fortunate enough to have been born during the era of these great artists.
Yes, that's right.
If you're 20-something, you know, those guys are long gone.
Yeah.
Well, certainly Freddie is. I know Elton's still around.
Yes,
but
that's
you're
right.
You're not going to go and experience Elton the way we experienced Elton. And the only way you can have some of that is to go and watch a film.
Yeah, okay, I accept that. And also, many people will, you know, think I'm being mealy-mouthed, criticised Elton John, one of the most successful individual entertainers and performers of all time. And, you know, outstandingly successful. He could do a season of, you know, 3 months in Las Vegas and sell it out every night and all that kind of stuff. It's just that I didn't like his records. You know, I'm not decrying his talent and all that. But look, I liked one or two of his records, like Crocodile Rock. And
so you like the upbeat numbers.
And I'm Still Standing. But
okay.
I can't stand all the ballads. You
Are you somebody who shakes a leg at a party to
not
tracks
really.
Like that?
No,
no,
no.
You
no.
don't dance?
Not anymore. Not anymore. I just lean
Did
on
you
the bar.
Once?
Yeah, I used to. Yeah, of course I used to. Yeah, everybody used to. But, you know, I just lean on the bar. And I'm talking about rock stars. This guy doesn't exactly fall into the category of rock star, but he's a pop performer. He's been very successful. And he is 65 this week. His name is Mike Nolan, and he's from Bucks Fizz.
Is making he 65 your mind up. This
65
week?
65 this
My
week.
My goodness.
So have you ever bumped into Mike Nolan?
No, but Jay Aston used to come our
the other
lunches.
The female member of the group,
But she's an MP now. Doesn't she? She's with the Brexit Party, I think.
Yeah, she is with the Brexit Party, but I don't think she got voted in. Because no Brexit MPs did get voted in. But
well,
she's
she
a politician.
Standing. Yeah, she was standing.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Lovely
yeah.
woman. And she went through some horrible surgery in the last few years as
did
well.
She
had surgery on her vocal cords,
Oh, really? Well, I mean, corrective surgery.
She
was trying to improve them or something.
And she had cancer.
Oh, dear, that's awful.
And she survived.
That's awful. She's
a lovely woman.
Yeah.
Oh, but no, Bucks Fizz, I mean, look.
Yeah.
In the days when Britain won the Eurovision Song
Making
Contest,
your mind up.
That
Da-da.
I could never quite go with the sort of skirt ripping off.
Oh, I love that
secret. Well, of course, you would.
Yeah, yeah,
you would.
Well, no, not because I thought it was sexy, because it's not really very sexy. See a woman in a leotard instead of a skirt. I just thought visually the impact was sensational. You know, it was a great idea. Whoever thought about it, that really put them on the map, didn't it? You know,
yeah,
it really did.
Yeah,
no,
it did.
I thought it was terrific, and also. And you'll know this better than me. You've probably covered the story. It all went wrong for them when their coach driver crashed his coach and one member of the group, and it might have been Mike Nolan, it might have been the other guy, went through the front windscreen of the coach and landed on the road.
Yeah.
And he had like brain problems for years afterwards.
The coach crashing thing is quite a thing in
that
rock and roll.
That was in Newcastle.
Yeah, I can't remember where it was.
Yeah, it was in Newcastle, I think,
Do you remember when Gloria Estefan's coach crashed years ago? And she almost had her spine severed. It was half a millimetre away from, and that would have paralysed her for life.
God.
But of course, they spend so much time on the road in coaches, travelling from destination to destination when they're on tour.
Yes, that's right.
But it is quite a common thing to happen for rock stars to be injured or killed on the road.
Well,
look at Eddie Cochran.
Well,
was killed in a taxi in the West Country.
Eddie Cochran in this country, but in America, old Betty Sue, you know, Peggy Sue.
Buddy Holly was in a plane.
In a plane.
Got killed in a plane crash.
With the Big Bopper in the same plane.
Yeah.
I mean, by the way, that's... who was the one who died in the West Country here, did you say?
Eddie Cochran.
Eddie Cochran. Because there's some strange story there that the first policeman on the scene, who was a very young policeman...
That's right. He was Dave D, I think. Went into
That's
Dave D, Dozy, Beaky, Mick and Titch.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Most remarkable story. So here's this great pop star gets killed in a remote part of the West Country in a car accident. The first policeman to arrive is a 19-year-old, you know, trainee police constable, who I think...
He got the guitar. He got the guitar, Eddie Cochran's guitar, which Mark Bolan had carried... To and from a taxi. That was a great story of Mark Bolan's.
Really?
Because it was like a holy grail.
Right.
This guitar.
Are you telling me this policeman nicked the guitar?
No. It was in the police station.
Oh, I see.
And I think he picked it up and strummed it a little bit.
Oh, I see.
And got the bug.
Because
I mean, even if it's not true, it's a great story.
One of the bits I read was that he took the number plate off the car and he still got it. The crash, you know, the car like disintegrated and he had to pick up a lot of the debris which was left lying around. And he picked up the number plate and he kept the number plate.
Yeah, maybe he did.
Yeah, maybe he did. I don't know. But anyway, look, that's all my Nolan. Now, look, I tell you what I'll talk to you about because it's worrying me greatly. I live down in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey. And do you have a fear that if you rub up Vladimir Putin the wrong way, you might get knocked off in this country.
Yeah, I'm always a little bit worried about saying anything about the Russian regime.
Are you?
And I have been worried.
I mean, are you genuinely?
Yeah, let me tell you why.
Right,
when my son was at Dulwich College,
yes,
down in Dulwich, southeast London,
yes,
there was Abramovich's kid was in one of the years, a couple of years down from my son, and he was brought to school every
Abramovich,
day.
Abramovich, the owner of Chelsea.
Roman Abramovich.
Yes.
He was brought to school every day in a white Rolls Royce.
Right.
With two bodyguards.
Right.
Who remained on campus all day long.
All day.
And they would sit on a chair either side of the classroom door, whichever class this child was in.
Yes.
At the given time.
And that
time.
Was their job.
Yeah. And my sons came home in a state one day and he said, Mummy, these guys have got guns. I said, what do you mean they've got guns?
Yeah.
He said, when they sit outside the classroom door, their jackets fall open and you can see the gun holsters and there are guns in them.
Good job.
So I take this up with the school. I said,
right. Yeah, this is very interesting.
Nobody has asked me whether it's okay for there to be armed bodyguards on the premises.
Yes.
I pay the same fees as Roman Abramovich. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
What if there is a kidnapping attempt and a shootout
and
my child just happens to get caught in the crossfire on the South Gravel?
Yeah.
Oh, no explanation did they give us. We don't have to ask permission of existing parents as to which children we're allowed to accept into the school.
No, but hang on.
They are risking the life of my child.
It's also illegal to carry firearms in this country.
Except
so did they have a special dispensation?
I did put that point to them and they countered it with the fact that this was not public property, it's private property, it's a private school.
Oh, I see.
And it's not a public highway.
So you're saying the school had given the permission to Roman Abramovich to allow him to arm his bodyguards who were guarding his children all day on private land?
That is my understanding.
Well, yeah, in that case, you should have told the local police to wait outside the school grounds to the end of the school day, and the minute those bodyguards walked, you know, got in the Rolls Royce and drove out, stopped them, apprehend them, they'd be carrying firearms.
But
I think
the local police knew about it.
They must have done.
Yeah.
They must have done. They must have been in cahoots with it.
So I've always been a bit, because I did speak up about this on a couple of occasions, and people would say to me, oh no, keep quiet about that if I were you. You know, you don't want to be bumped off.
Yeah.
And so I think, well, there is something in that, you know. If I'm seen to be criticising the regime...
I'm asking you seriously, and I'll tell you why. Because I keep an eye now. I live in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey, and in the last sort of decade, up to 7 prominent Russians who lived in rich country houses in Surrey or East Sussex have mysteriously died.
And then there was that guy, the Russian, went over the side of the balcony in Marylebone.
I was going to make another point to you. But there seems to be an awful lot of people who somehow fall out with the Russians who end up falling off balconies very high up on buildings, either here or in Berlin or somewhere else. Now, I've suspected it all for quite a while, but one of the reasons I brought this up is, do you know a lad called Ben McIntyre, a writer for The Times? He's a great writer. And
I haven't met him.
And he's written spy books, and he wrote a great bestseller called, you know, The Great Story About Getting Spies Out of East Germany into the West and all that kind of stuff. And I worked with Ben in America in the 80s, and he was always destined for great stuff. Highly intellectual. And I saw a piece from him in the Times recently. It says, SMERSH, S-M-E-R-S-H, which we all thought was a fictional organisation. SMERSH, spy killers, are back in business. They actually exist. The Russians have an organisation called SMERSH. And these guys go around the world meeting out justice. And Ben, who knows a lot about this sort of stuff, right? In 1942, military intelligence section of the Red Army set up a new unit to investigate traitors and deserters, liquidate enemy agents, and enforce an ideological conformity by destroying anti-Soviet elements. And then you read this piece with Ben, it's still going on. He makes it absolutely clear this is still going on, OK? Now, the latest one, and again, this is why I'm starting to get worried, living in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey, was a very rich Russian who mysteriously was hit and killed by a car whilst walking his dog, right? A friend of a Russian tycoon who was killed in a road accident while walking his dog in Surrey has suggested that he may have been targeted. Dmitry Obreteski.
Oh, nice accent.
Yes, that's right. Age 49, was hit by a car as he walked his black Labrador on Oxshott Heath. That's not very far from me, Oxshott, believe me, right?
Have you got something to hide?
I haven't got anything to hide, but I mean, I just don't want to get caught in the crossfire, as you quite rightly said. He was heading back towards his gated mock Georgian mansion at about 4:45 p.m. on Monday last week when Mr. Obratetsky was taken to hospital after the collision, where he fell into a coma and died on Saturday. His dog was wiped out at the scene.
Oh,
three vehicles were involved. It's not clear whether he was hit, by which car he was hit. Investigations are ongoing.
Question.
Now, yeah.
How do these people, these assassins, how do they get in here in the first place?
They're sleepers. They've been here for like 40 years.
Oh, okay.
Some of them used to work.
But not the Novichok attackers, the ones in Salisbury.
Well, they came as tourists. They came as on a tourist
visa. But they came armed with the poison and so on.
Again, I've read all sorts of reports of that. That one, Putin didn't want to hide it on the basis that that guy was so completely anti-Russian, the message went out, there is no hiding place from Smirsh, we will get you. And he didn't even try to cover it up. Yeah. And he knew these guys would get out before it was discovered, and he was never going to send them back to this country. And it was a message to go around the world.
My best friend from school lives in Salisbury, and I quite often go because my daughter is at university in Devon.
Yes.
And on the way back or on the way down, I'll call in and spend the night. We'll go out for dinner or whatever else.
Yes.
It's a nice way to catch up with a friend.
Yes.
But Salisbury is an empty place compared to what it was. It's really totally damaged the economy of that
city. Right, because the Russians go around poisoning people there.
But the victims, the real victims, are innocent people
were
nothing to do with anything, who just got caught up in it.
Well,
as
I don't particularly want to go to Salisbury in case some of the poison's still
hanging around. So it's got one of the
finest
cathedrals in the land.
That's right.
It's got Stonehenge nearby, which is a wonderful tourist complex to visit.
And they found poison a month later, didn't they? In a perfume bottle. But look, it says here, after Mr. Obratetsky's death, posts appeared on Russian forums calling him a traitor of the motherland, and there are now fears that other people in this country are being targeted. You know, these guys are always involved in business deals involving things like 9 billion rubles, which is...
Wherever there's money. But what are we looking at, a new Cold War?
Well, no, I think this is the Cold War now. I think this is how the Cold War is fought now. Now, the one that really interested me was Boris Berezovsky, found hanged in his home in Surrey in 2013.
Oh, they made it look like a suicide, didn't they?
Right, you're absolutely right. Now this guy, Berezovsky, right, a colleague of mine who I worked with in radio, was a big West End luncher, OK? Not all the time, you know, anywhere would do, but West End often when he was invited over there. So he told me once, he went over to this great restaurant in the West End. I don't know which one it was. I don't use a lot of restaurants in the West End, but it was of the quality of being a five-star restaurant in a hotel. You know what I mean? That kind of Woolsey or something like that.
Yeah,
you know
it's nicer.
Whatever. Anyway, Al, my friend Al, is sitting in a window seat, you know, with a couple of colleagues, and a convoy of cars drives up, 3 4x4s, blackout windows and all that. Out of the first car, four men emerge. They come into the restaurant. Two of them scan the restaurant. The other two go to the bathrooms and scan the bathrooms, OK? And then two of them go back out and report to the second car, where another group of men get out and come and talk to the maitre d'. And they go back out and report. And out of the third car, Mr. Berezovsky got out with his own personal bodyguard next to him and sat at a table of his own, with one companion, a woman, OK? But each of the tables at the four points around his table were vacated and the bodyguards sat at those tables. He was literally surrounded by bodyguards.
Well, you'd never go out, would you? If you had to live like that, if you had to get everywhere with a bodyguard...
Yep.
And there is always that danger as well. And I've often thought about, you know, if you take things right back to Shakespearean times...
Yes.
When the people closest to you will betray you.
Yes.
What about the day when the bodyguard turns around and he's the one who's going to kill you?
Well, I mean...
You're never protected, are you?
You're never protected. Are you a fan of Peaky Blinders?
No.
Right. In Peaky Blinders, the conclusion of one of the stories was that just as the Peaky Blinders thought the game was up because the Italians, the mafia, had come after them and they were about to be mown down, what the Peaky Blinders had very cleverly done is exactly what you've just said. They found the minders to the mafia in this country and paid them double to shoot the mafia guys instead of themselves in the final shootout. You know what I mean? And it's brilliant. But look, just before we get off this subject, just let me read you this list. Russian deaths. Litvinenko. He was the guy who went orange.
Oh, stabbed with an umbrella, wasn't he?
No. Litvinenko was the guy who sucked the polonium tea.
Oh, the tea. Who was the umbrella guy?
Oh, that was years ago, and he was East German.
Okay.
Sorry, he was an East German defector, and they put a poison pellet in his leg at the end of an umbrella. Another guy called Patar Koshevili died suddenly at home in Leatherhead, which is in Surrey, in 2008. Alexander Perepolitsky died whilst jogging in Weybridge in 2012.
This is like that scene in The Fish Called Wanda where he, what's his name? John Cleese is speaking in Russian and Jamie Lee Curtis is having an orgasm.
That's
all over.
Right, yeah, because he's so good. Boris Berezovsky hanged in his home 2013. All the evidence points out that he couldn't have hanged himself because it was all too awkward. You know what I mean? Nikolai Glushnikov, found with strangulation marks at his home in 2018. And then Mr. Obtratesky, who died while walking dog. And they've even mentioned the one that you talked about, the guy who came over the balcony. Mm. Do you remember his wife was trying to sue him for £45 million in a divorce settlement?
She got nothing.
She was never able to say where his money came from. Mm. He had a fortune of over £400 million. She wanted £45 million. And just as the divorce hearing started and she got awarded the money, bang, he ends up flying up, but he'd done business in Russia. So, you're absolutely right. We're not kidding here, folks. You know, be very, very careful because Schmirsch, which you thought only existed in James Bond films,
is alive and well.
A reality. Okay, folks, you're listening to Planet Porky, the podcast. Leslie Ann, we've discussed a fair range of subjects in this one, but the Russians, that will...
we're flying by the seat of our pants.
Yeah, that's right. The Russia. Listen, let's move from Russians to Germans because I'll tell you why. The very first alcoholic wine I ever ordered in a restaurant. I mean, look, I've been going in pubs since I was 15, ordering a pint of lager and lime or a pint of bitter. But then I think when I was about 17, I took a girlfriend out for a restaurant meal for the first
17,
time.
17, you started young.
Yeah, well, I worked all the time.
I think I was about 21 before I...
No, I had jobs in petrol stations and I had jobs in, also bakeries. And also, I was always working
I
wasn't school.
My first job, I was an assistant in a hairdressing salon.
Right.
I used to sweep up hair.
Right, yeah,
gross.
Good. Yeah.
And shampoo the ladies, also gross.
Yes.
But then I worked in Marks & Spencer in the food department.
Oh, right, okay.
For years.
Very good.
And loved it.
Well done. Well, that's what I think all youngsters should as well. But anyway, that's
it. But Saturday jobs don't exist anymore.
Do they not?
No, because all the older people, retired people,
right,
snapped up all those jobs.
Did they?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think the younger ones want to anyway.
Really. Oh, yeah, they do. My son has actually got three jobs.
Has he?
Yeah. So
Excellent.
He works.
What does he do?
He works at the bar. He's at a performing arts school. He works at the bar when there's a show on.
Yeah.
He works in an estate agent, actually on Saturdays.
Right.
So he does have a Saturday job.
Yeah.
He's also currently working at Winter Wonderland.
Oh, good.
In Hyde Park. Yeah.
Excellent. Well done for him. Good. I like that boy. Now, what I was going to say is, so the only wine I was aware of, we weren't a big drinking family. My father didn't start drinking till all his children left home. And then he started drinking very, very heavily. But
he missed you so much.
Well, he must have missed me so much. But during the course of our upbringing, there was never any alcohol in the house. And in fact, it was a real thrill at Christmas when a bottle of Blue Nun wine was put on the table. I don't know if you've ever tasted Blue Nun.
It's very sweet, actually.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's the only wine I knew. So when I, you know, proudly took out my girlfriend for the first time at 17, she was 16.
You didn't order Blue Nun.
I ordered Blue Nun,
No.
I thought this will show.
No.
Yeah, no, this will make me very sophisticated, you know what I mean?
So also make you very ill.
Well, whatever, yeah. Made her very ill, actually. She wasn't used to drinking at 16, and I had to carry her home. And her father was...
I hope you were honourable.
I was very honourable, and her father was a sergeant major in the British Army, and they were in
worse.
An army camp just
this
outside
story gets
of town.
Worse.
Yeah, and I had to sort of, you know...
You've been saving this one, haven't you?
Not really. I was holding her up on the door, you know, as her father. But fortunately, because I went to the local...
Was she sick on your shoes?
No, she wasn't. No. I mean, she was just very slurry.
Did her dad come out in his Tesco underpants and relieve you of his daughter?
No, it was literally on the doorstep. You know, I got a taxi home for her, you know, and I went in the taxi, obviously.
I'm talking like I know what I'm talking about.
Yes, of course you do.
Yeah, I had a few experiences over the years.
But anyway, there we are. The reason I tell this story is because I've come across information from one of my wine journals to say that the German wine is on its way back. As a rebranding job goes, the rehabilitation of German wine has been a long process. But finally, 35 years after Blue Nun stopped being sold in this country. So that's 35 years ago. right? It actually went off the shelves in this country.
Entire lifetime.
Yeah, that's right. The British public are once again lapping up Liebfrau milk.
Now, why?
God knows.
It tasted disgusting.
Liebfrau milk.
Yeah, it's awful.
What is
it's
it?
It's utterly awful.
I mean, Milch is milk. Yeah. Liebfrau, what's that? Is that white milk?
Dear woman's milk. That's what it is. It's mother's milk.
Mother's
a
milk.
Darling mother's milk.
Oh, my God.
Ugh.
It says...
Have you ever drunk breast milk?
No. Don't be
just
ridiculous.
Asking.
No, please. Not going there. It says, indeed, sales are soaring according to retailers, particularly in upmarket establishments, as German vineyards have established a reputation.
That's cultural appropriation,
Have established a reputation amongst connoisseurs and sommeliers. Sommeliers are people who, like, taste wine, aren't they?
Well, they sort of bring it round with the little thing hanging around their neck, and they know everything about wine.
Yeah, for quality, with their wines aging well and offering good value. Germany is the fastest-growing wine region, for instance, at Giusterini and Brooks. Wine merchants to the royal family, since 1749, sales are up by 40% over the past year. It says it sold more German wine in the first quarter of this year than in the whole of 2016. The other popular German brand, Riesling, is the most popular grape, accounting for 90% of German sales. But Giusterini and Brooks says it has also seen an increased interest in German Pinot Noir. Oh, now, Pinot Noir is red, isn't it?
Well, yeah, Pinot Noir is red.
Yeah.
You get the Pinot Grigio, which is the white.
Yeah, well, that's
right?
Italian.
But hang on, why? Who is buying this? Who's drinking it?
Well, it says the growth is coming from top restaurants who are taking German wine serious again. Julian Campbell, a buyer for the company, that's for this Giusterini and Brooks organisation, suppliers to the Queen, said the quality and breadth of the wines being produced is increasing all the time. We are seeing real interest from younger private clients who are finding huge amounts of interesting wines in a variety of styles. So it's young people now. Marks and Spencer has seen sales of its Palatai Pinot Noir, a German brand, rise 75% year on year, while sales of Mineralstein Riesling.
You're doing it again.
Yeah, Mineralstein Riesling.
You're not allowed to do that.
Have doubled over the same period.
I disapprove.
Sales...
You know what this is? You don't care, I know.
Yeah.
You know what this is? This is Emperor's New Clothes.
This is
like the Vogue editor saying at the beginning of a season that orange and turquoise are the colours of the season.
Right.
So all the manufacturers go into overdrive and they manufacture clothes in those colours, and then all the people who read the magazines on the streets are going, all right, I've got to get something in those colours because somebody said that these are the colours of the season. Somebody has said that this is the wine of the moment, and so to look...
Trendy.
You're part of the club, you have to go and drink it, and you're going to drink it even if you don't like it.
Right.
Which, quite frankly, they're not going to like it because it is a very unpleasant wine.
Yeah, I agree.
So why?
I agree. Blue Nun, Riesling.
This is headless chickens.
It is headless chickens.
People need to develop tastes of their own.
I mean, listen, you think about many things when you think of the Germans. You think of fantastic engineering, Mercedes cars, Audi cars, BMW cars. You think of the... sheer efficiency of their railway service, you know, the ICE trains, the intercity express trains, which are never a second late, and all that kind of stuff. You think of, you know...
Not Forest Gatto, but
Bavaria itself and the beautiful countryside.
Beautiful
and,
place,
and,
but Bavaria.
It is.
Munich, which is an incredible city.
Munich and
Berlin.
Munich and Berlin.
David Bowie's recordings.
Yeah, Frankfurt. I've been to all these places and they have a fantastic culture. You know, we're not going to talk about the war because obviously that
Don't mention the war.
Don't mention the war. But the problem is that,
I think we got away
that
with
countries
it.
Do go to war with each other and then... You can repair it with history and time.
Japan. I mean, some of my best friends are Japanese.
Absolutely. And even like America and Vietnam, believe it or not. I mean, I haven't been to Vietnam. I don't really like the Far East.
Have you ever had Vietnamese wine?
No.
It's going to be rice wine.
But what I'm saying is, I know people who have been to Vietnam and they say the American influence there now is enormous.
Yeah.
You know, everything
Things
is important
move on.
For America. That's
Forgiveness
right.
Forgiveness is all.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But anyway, look, getting
back
to
the German wine.
Don't drink the German wine. So, as my appetite, or certainly my palate, had been tasted by all things German, I thought I'll have another look at this. And I find out from one of my industrial journals, right, that Germans take four times as many sickies as Britons. Now, I find this very hard to believe.
Yeah, I do too. As if they would tolerate that. If you were a German boss and your employees were throwing a sickie every couple of weeks, well, wouldn't you fire them?
Well, you'd think so. This comes from a report laid out in Berlin. German workers took more than four times as many sick days on average as their British counterparts last year, according to a national study. Absence through illness reached, get this, right, I can't believe this, reached 18 and a half days per employee in the last recorded year, 2018.
That's almost like taking another 3 weeks holiday.
Well, 18 days, three and a half weeks.
Yeah.
Three and a half weeks. But get this, Berliners were the worst, taking 21 days, but residents of Saxony-Anhalt, I don't know where that is, do you?
It's somewhere. Being it's a province, Saxony, province, isn't it?
Yeah, took 26 days. So that is...
They must have better
weeks.
Clubs there than they have in Berlin in that case.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really good nightclubs in Berlin.
Oh, yeah, I know, yeah. But it says here, by contrast, British workers took an average of only 4 days.
Yeah.
Because our work laws now mean that a lot, you know, sometimes if you don't work, you don't get paid. In the public sector, you get paid, but there are so many people now in this country who literally work on a...
0 hours.
Zero
contract.
Hours, day-paid basis. Yeah. They don't take time off.
They can't afford to. So it's obvious that people are taking the time off because they're actually pulling a fast one.
Yeah. It says
they're
here,
being cheeky.
It says here, high productivity and strong job security in Germany's labour market are thought to make it easier for workers to call in sick. The most common cause was musculoskeletal problems, a new definition for back pain, which made up 24% of cases. And this comes from a report by BKK, which represents 76 German health insurers who are getting fed up with the amount of time workers are taking off and they're compensating them for it. In Germany, they have these insurance policies where the employer can claim money back from the health insurers if their workers take time off. So it's affecting the insurance companies.
Oh, well, it's going to. And of course, depression is a reason given for time off a lot of the time
is
these
it?
Days.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's on the rise as well.
Yeah. Separate data from the World Health Organization showed Germany has one of the highest rates of sick leave in Europe, with the average EU worker taking just under 12 days on the same report. Well, we said 4 days already, and now they said 12 days. I think 4 days... I mean, most people take more sickies than 4 days. I've never taken a sickie, have you?
I think I probably have.
I don't think
it's
I ever
a
have.
Long, long time since I've been on the staff anywhere.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Been self-employed for such a long time.
Yeah.
Interestingly, self-employed people don't take time off.
No, of course they don't.
We carry on working because we have to.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. We have to. Not only do we have to, but if we don't, not only are you denting your income prospects, but in this world... If you're not there one day, whoever you're working for
somebody
will find somebody else who can do it.
Yeah.
It's a very cutthroat.
Seriously,
and by the way, I'm not against that because an economy that works like that on you know inch-by-inch competition has got to be an efficient economy. And I hope that will continue. We've got a new government now, but we want to make sure that, you know, all the best parts of the British economy, you know, being productive and being, you know, driven and rewarding have to go on. Are you listening, you politicians there in Whitehall? Let's get on with it. Right, now, there was only one other thing I wanted to talk to you about, Leslie-Anne, and...
only one other thing?
Well, yeah, now... The gales that we suffered recently, right, it was Storm Attia. Did you know that?
I find it odd that they name the storms. Why do they do this?
I'm about to put this to you. Why was the recent storm that swept through Britain called Storm Attia? What, in fact, is Storm Attia? Storm Attia, so they started today.
A storm in a tear cup.
Why couldn't we... Yes, I don't mind you making jokes like that because it's so ridiculous.
It is ridiculous to name a storm.
So it's Storm A, why couldn't it be Storm Albert?
Yeah.
Storm
Andrew. They all have different names, don't they? There was a Storm Gareth. No, I have a brother called Gareth. So
well, let me tell you this. Storm Attia. So what does Attia mean? Oh, when I tried to find out. Oh, it's Arabic for gift from God.
Mm.
But we don't speak Arabic in this country.
No, but I think they just pick random names for these storms.
Well, they don't,
why?
You see. They don't. Because then we get to B, and B was, instead of Barbara or Brenda or whatever you want, you know, Bessie, which would have been very British. No, we're going to call that Storm Babar. Storm Babar? Yeah, pronounced like Barber, as in the Barber of Seville. What is it? It's Urdu for tiger.
Okay.
But we don't speak a lot of Urdu in this country,
either,
do we?
It's not making any sense to me.
No, we speak some Urdu.
Yeah, but why do we have to name them in the first place?
Well, it's an Americanism. We never used to have Halloween here until it came from America. We never had
Black
Friday.
Well, you know why Halloween? That was because of E.T.
Of what?
E.T.
E.T., right,
the film.
Right, okay.
So there was a Halloween kind of night in that, wasn't it? And then suddenly that became a big new thing here.
Right, okay. So we've so far got an Arabic one, an Urdu one. I mean, a few people speak Arabic in this country. A few people speak Urdu.
Arabic, but most of us, you'll find.
Yeah, most of us speak English, okay? So then we go to other names when we get to G. Oh, G will be Hurricane Gerda. Gerda? What's Gerda? Oh, Gerda is a Scandinavian name meaning guardian of peace and fertility. But nobody speaks Scandinavian in this country.
It's only a name. What's in a name? But why name them in the first place? That is my question.
When we get to S, it'll be Hurricane Samir. Really? What is Samir? Oh, that's derived from Sanskrit. It's a word for gust of wind or gentle breeze.
Okay. Has anybody asked the Met Office why we're calling them names?
This is a report I got, and they just said, well, you know, we have a committee who comes up with them.
Jobs for the boys. That's like the girl who sits around coming up with names for nail varnishes.
I totally agree.
Peel me a goby grape.
Yeah. So when we get to P, they said, yes, that'll be Hurricane Pete. I thought, last we got somewhere. But no, it's spelled P-I-E. T. It's not Piet as in...
Piet as in Scandinavian as well.
Yeah, exactly. The only one that we can in any way recognise with is Storm N will be Storm Noah. Now, again, we all know Noah is and had an ark and all that kind of stuff, but very few people in this country are called Noah. I don't get it.
It's a waste of time, this, isn't it, really? Why are we wasting our time talking about it?
Because, once again, it's chipping away at the British tradition. And again, you know, you new politicians, you new government, you must protect all the British traditions that we've grown up with and which we've had for hundreds of years.
Fully behind that. Yeah. Tradition is very important.
Of course it is.
To a culture and to sustaining our sense of identity as a nation.
It certainly is. Right, OK. Well, that's it for today, folks. But once again, thank you for joining us. Thank you for all your messages. Just to remind you, because, of course, I'm right on top of this communication thing. It's planetporkypod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, please. Thank you, really, honestly. The last two or three podcasts now have been with Leslie Ann Jones, and we've got some fantastic responses. I don't know about you, Leslie Ann, but I really appreciate the responses we get from the audience.
I'm thrilled to hear from everybody, so keep them coming.
They love your voice, and they want to know if we're going to be going into the new year doing the same sort of thing. Well, let me tell you, folks, I mean this quite sincerely, the whole world is changing, and podcasts are going to take a bigger and bigger part of your life, because with podcasts, you can listen to them when you want to listen to them. You can download them, you put on an app, you stick your earphones in on the train on the way home or to work, and you can listen when you want to listen. And there are some very, very exciting new podcast ideas and productions coming out in the new year. So stay tuned, folks. And as we are approaching Christmas, we will be with you again before Christmas, but it is the festive season, and Leslie Ann, I want to wish everybody out there a happy festive season.
A very, very happy festive season, even.
You've got too much to drink already.
That's just two wines, not even German.
Exactly.
But yeah, stay safe, everyone.
That's right, absolutely great. Thank you very much indeed. Signing off now from Planet Porky. A colleague of mine, who I worked with in radio, was a big West End luncher, OK? Not all the time, you know, anywhere would do, but West End often when he was invited over there. So he told me once, he went over to this great restaurant in the West End. I don't know which one it was. I don't use a lot of restaurants in the West End, but it was of the quality of being a five-star restaurant in a hotel, you know what I mean? That kind of Woolsey or something like that.
Yeah,
you know
it's nice there.
Whatever. Anyway, my friend Al is sitting in a window seat, you know, with a couple of colleagues, and a convoy of cars drives up, 3 4x4s, blackout windows and all that. Out of the first car, four men emerge. They come into the restaurant, two of them scan the restaurant, the other two go to the bathrooms and scan the bathrooms, okay? And then two of them go back out and report to the second car, where another group of men get out and come and talk to the maitre d'. and they got back out and report, and out of the third car, Mr. Berezovsky got out with his own personal bodyguard next to him and sat at a table of his own with one companion, a woman, OK? But each of the tables at the four points around his table were vacated, and the bodyguards sat at those tables. He was literally surrounded by bodyguards.
Well, you'd never go out, would you? Have you ever drunk breast milk?
No. Don't be ridiculous.
Just asking.
No, please. Not going there.